Hello and welcome everybody to Flickr Effect. It is a Wednesday, July 5th, 2023. I'm David Lott, by the way. Joining me is Bobby Jackson. How's it going, Bobby?
Hello. Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Also here, Michelle Hillard.
Hi, everyone. Hello.
On the agenda tonight, really one thing. We're going to be talking about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, so I guess just a little background on that. It did open over the weekend, the holiday weekend, and it made $60 million opening weekend. And to date, I guess with you including 4th of July and I think the last couple of days, it's at $83 million domestic and worldwide $154 million.
Interesting box office numbers.
Yeah, not quite what the studio was hoping for, but
yeah, what was the projection? Do you remember?
I don't know if I ever saw a specific projection other than I think that they were thinking at least maybe 70, 75 million, somewhere around there were things I think I heard rumored. But outside of that, I think that as far as the Rotten Tomatoes score, the critics, once again, is a little bit more on the side of not liking it as much. They had a 68% for the Rotten Tomato score. And last I looked, it was at 88% for audience score. Audiences seems to like it.
Those two numbers are right on the money from what I'm looking at right now. Yep. Yeah. 68% is not terrible. I mean, it's like, you know, technically it's certified fresh by Rotten Tomato standards. And that's obviously a mostly positive score.
But
it's odd though, like that it didn't make as much as you'd think it would based on a pretty decent audience score, especially being a holiday weekend.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wonder how many, even though the audience score is solid, I don't know what goes into the audience score other than, like, I mean, anyone can rate that, right? And like,
no, you have to have seen the movie and have proof that you've seen the movie in order to get a rating on Rotten Tomatoes for the audience score.
But I guess what I'm thinking is, like, how many, I mean, the score's good, but are there a lot fewer ratings for this one compared to, you know, others? It's easy to see the critic amount of reviews because there's only so many, you know, like certified critics for Rotten Tomatoes. Like, for instance, right now it's 337, but almost every time I look at the audience score, it's 5,000 plus, you know, and like, you know, is there like 10,000 reviews of this compared to a movie that did incredibly well where it has like 50,000 or something, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Even though it's positive, still just, I wonder how many people from younger generations are just like, I don't really care about Indiana Jones. And the one movie in my lifetime that came out was really not very good. So why should I go see this?
It's funny you say that, because at work, I kind of had this conversation with somebody on Friday before the weekend, because you and I had seen it Thursday night. And I was kind of like, I just saw the Indiana Jones. She's like, you know, she's like, no offense, I have no desire to see that movie. I'm like, really? She's like, they all happened way before I was born, and I was a kid when that one came out, and I didn't really care then, and I don't really care now. And like, that's fun. Like, she's a positive person, so it's funny to hear her say that. She wasn't trying to be negative. She was just being kind of like, I'm really not interested. And she is much younger than we are.
Right.
And so for her, she was just kind of like, I'm good, but thanks.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there'll be a risk of them making any more, so, as we knew before going into this. So, I think this.
At least not for a while. I don't think that they'll ever not make it because it's IP that they own, and of course, they'll try and take another bite at that apple at some point.
Right. This is true. I mean, I hear that a lot about other franchises. You'll hear on various stuff where people are like, oh, do you think they'll ever make one of these again, a Harry Potter again or something? And, you know, I there's always a part of me that's like, I mean, ever? ever?
Mm, like, right.
I mean, a long time from now.
Well, you would think, right? But then I never would have... I don't know that I would have easily guessed that they would make another Lord of the Rings trilogy in my lifetime, for the theaters. Not talking about what we got with Rings of Power. Like the actual trilogy again. I wouldn't have guessed that. So you just never know.
Oh yeah, this is true. Like, yeah, but there's something about, I guess, Indiana Jones that if I had to bet on something that obviously you could never prove, because who knows how far into the future they could possibly make one. But I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, will they though? Will they ever revisit this? I mean, like you said, maybe someday, but I would imagine far into the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, well, why don't we talk about this one? I figure we're going to talk about this spoiler-free first. And then we'll get into some spoiler thoughts as well. Michelle and I have actually talked about this off air, which we don't do with a lot of movies, but I was just way too curious to know. She's too big of an Indiana Jones fan. I have to know what she thought of this movie. So I've heard her thoughts, but Bobby, I haven't heard yours.
Yeah, but I haven't heard either of yours. So I don't know that that's fair either. This is true.
Should I be using the bowl?
I mean, I think we should go to the bowl.
Oh, man, where is the bowl? The bowl is right here.
It's all the way at the TV.
Oh, is it?
It's all over there.
Oh, man, I can get to it. Hold on.
Can you stretch like the guy? I just watched the season finale for Severance last night. I had some time.
Oh, since you it was did? 4th
of July and all that. Uh-huh. So I finished the last three episodes I hadn't had a chance to finish since forever. And the one part when the guy, he's just like stretching and holding these two knobs for I don't know how long, but just the fact that he was able to hold it for that long.
Oh no, it's impressive.
Made me think of David trying to reach the bowl from wherever he is. Can you reach that bowl, or do you have to actually get up for it?
Oh yeah. No, it's a get up kind
of
situation.
Of course, I put my headphones back on, and people are holding knobs. What's going on? What did I miss?
I'll clue you in later.
Okay, all right. I have the bowl. Took Yasha's name out. Here we go. First up, it's probably going to be me, right? No, it's Michelle.
Well, okie dokie. Ah.
Michelle, fill us in.
All right. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. As everybody knows, I love Indiana Jones. Like, love, love, love. Grew up as a child loving all three Indiana Jones's films. Thinking that they were wonderful and great. And then at some point they made a fourth film about it. And that wasn't so great. but Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny is the fifth film in the Indiana Jones franchise. And David and I saw it on Thursday evening. And I really had to go with my expectations super, super low. And I'm glad that I did, because I will say, when it comes to this film, I enjoyed it. I think it was a nice ride. I think the storytelling was pretty good. Maybe I could see a smidge too long, and I have some things that I bumped on with certain characters and just a couple other little things. I mean, there's an overarching discussion that I'm looking forward to having once we get to spoilers, but we can't really have that discussion right now. But overall, it felt like Indiana Jones. There was light humor throughout, a lot of action. I don't know. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Do I think it is a masterpiece? Heavens to Betsy's no. it definitely wraps up the franchise much better than where I think it was at in the fourth film. I think it definitely ends on a better note. Makes me feel a little bit better about the ending of this franchise, in my opinion. I think I think it was nice to watch Harrison Ford back in the saddle. He's comfortable in that skin, and I think he knows this character inside and out. This character is him. He is this character. It's, you know, a symbiotic relationship. But yeah, I'll just go with that. I really enjoyed it. I did not love it, but I enjoyed it. It is my fourth favorite Indiana Jones out of the five.
All right,
that is where I am.
That's your quick take.
Quick hot take.
All right. In that case, Bobby, I have the dial of destiny is drawn your name.
The bowl of destiny. We have it here, folks. You heard it first.
The bowl of destiny.
They should have called it the bowl of destiny.
Yes.
It's in the studio. We own it now. We took it away from Disney's Hollywood studios the other night.
The bowl of destiny has chosen you, Bobby. Speak.
Spoken. All right. So, yeah, I think with me going into this movie, obviously the reception from Cannes wasn't like it started to bring down my overall anticipation for it, just because I was hoping and really fingers crossed that it'd be glowing, that people came out of Cannes from really seeing this screening of it and in love with it. And so I think, like you, Michelle, I kind of went in with the tempered expectation, and I felt like once I saw the whole movie, I did like it, but I honestly think that I almost just barely liked it. It really kind of was like, for me, the last half an hour saved it for me. And I think that if it wasn't for that, I probably would have just not been able to say that I liked it very much. There's not a lot of things in terms of things that Harrison Ford does that I found bad. I think that he absolutely felt like Indy, just an older version of that character. He does well when he's on screen, and I enjoyed every time when he was on screen. Even the parts in the beginning where they show in the trailer that he's de-aged, and there's a lot of that in the beginning. And I was, obviously the CGI is spotty at times, but outside of that, the actual adventure part of it was great, and I enjoyed that a lot. I have issues with other aspects of this movie that really pulled it down for me, some being characters and others being story conveniences, I would say. So yeah, I was, even though, like I said, it barely squeaked by to liking it for me, but I still don't feel quite satisfied from it, even though I still could say I kind of liked it, kind of thing. So yeah, that's my quick thoughts on it.
Guess that leaves me to bring everyone up to speed. First, I'll say, when it comes to Indiana Jones, I also am quite a big fan. I really enjoyed the original trilogy as well growing up. Very, very much so. I remember seeing Last Crusade in a movie theater when it opened. Yeah, big fan. Also not a fan much at all of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which is also, like, it doesn't feel like it's been since 2008 since that came out. I don't know why, but that sounds so long ago. But not a big fan of that. And I, since then, kind of like Michelle, I'm just like, yeah, there's the original trilogy and that's it for me. I don't really almost recognize the fourth film. And similar to what you were saying, Bobby, my expectations going into this were pretty, now I wouldn't say pretty low, but tempered as well, based on like stuff we had been hearing. And, I didn't want to set myself up for failure, so I went in with lower expectations, and I enjoyed it. I would also say it's not great. Sure, if I threw them in an order, it would probably be my number four. Not probably, basically certainly, that it would be my fourth film in the list out of five. But I enjoyed it. No, not perfect. I have, you know, a couple nitpicks, I guess. But there's also things about it that I thought were fine and definitely better than the fourth film, for sure. A better note to end this franchise on, for sure. So, yeah, that's my quick take. It's one of those things where it's like, I think this is a movie for fans of Indiana Jones. If, like your coworker, Michelle, like people like that who really have never seen an Indiana Jones film before or just don't really care about them because they're from a long time ago and they're much younger and all they've seen or more recently seen was Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and didn't care for it. I don't know. You should bother going to see this movie. I don't know if it's really for you. I think it's almost for an older generation of people like us that grew up with these movies. And so I think that's the hurdle that they're having to deal with releasing this film and making money on it. So
I also think that definitely plays a part in it, but I do kind of wonder, with so many movies out at once and so close together, mm-hmm. if that plays a part in it as well, because I feel like you released this movie over Labor Day weekend, maybe there's a different result. Right. I don't know what else is coming out Labor Day weekend, but
just throwing it feels like it's out, probably,
like a little bit more, less congested than this month and the last month have been.
Yeah. I think that's part of it as well. I would agree. I mean, you know, we were talking out about that in a way off air earlier today, right? That, you know, there's so many big like tentpole films coming out that are trying to make like ridiculous amounts of money. Is there enough room for that? Yeah. And yeah, I think this could have certainly done better, but I don't think it still would have done like blockbuster numbers. No. Even if it had been hanging out on its own in a different part of the year.
But
better than it did, I think.
Yeah.
If this were the only movie and everyone is just like, well, I've got nothing else to see, I'll go check out an Indiana Jones film. I think the numbers would have been better. Well, I don't know. Those are brief thoughts, but I guess we can just go ahead and jump into spoilers and guess, unless you guys have anything else.
No, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Spoilers
from here on out for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Who wants to get us started?
Should we go in the order of the bowl?
I don't care.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
So I guess I'm going to leap into, I think, what probably, in my opinion, is the biggest discussion of the film, to me, and I already brought this up with David a little bit. We had this whole talk, and we don't really have an answer. It's just kind of this question that's kind of like, oh, interesting. And that is...
I'm trying to remember what this is.
So what is it that makes this film... Why is it about this film for me that makes it more viable, believable, understandable, relatable, that Indiana Jones can, at the end of the film... travel back in time, and that I accept and can go, yep, okay, I get that. And yet aliens having visited us from a distant, in a very, very distant time in history, and that I'm not so much on board with. That's a leap too far. What is it that makes that a leap too far for me? And I don't have an answer for it. I just have kind of ramblings on the whole topic. You know, I think what it is that going into Indiana Jones, I have this, you have to kind of, you can't take it super seriously. And you have to kind of let go a certain credible amount of historical accuracy / truth telling / make, like, you have to just let things kind of go a little bit, embrace kind of the unthinkable. I'm really at a loss for words tonight. I think that you, like, none of the original films in the trilogy, I think none of the things that happen in them are things that you would believe would actually occur. Like, everything is fantastical. Everything is make-believe. Like, none of it's... But they all have little threads of, like, reality tethered to them that make them make you go, I buy that. Like, oh, yeah, I buy the spirits inside the Ark coming out and then basically claiming the lives of all the people that opened the Ark, like a death thing. Like, I buy that. I buy an ancient civilization cult being reignited and people being able to, you know, pull out a person's heart from their chest while it still continues to beat and the person still kind of seems to be somewhat alive in the moment for a few moments. I can believe, you know, that there is a, God, who even knows, whatever, how many thousands of year old knight from the mythological stories of almost basically can't, well, you know, this is the Ark, or not the Ark, this is the chalice that was protected by knights for Jesus. They went after it for the Crusades. Like, this is a knight from the Crusades, and he's still alive and kicking in this cave in Jordan. And I'm totally okay with that. And that you can drink him a chalice and it can kill you, or you can drink him a chalice and it'll give you immortal life. Like, I'm okay with all of that. And yet, in the fourth film, you know, we have aliens that apparently visited us and left remnants. And then And then this one, oh yeah, we're going to travel back in time to the Roman War. And I'm totally cool with it. And I don't know where the line is. I don't understand where the line is or why that is. But it's there somewhere in existence. And that's just kind of my thoughts on the weirdness of it all. I don't really have a question to it. It's just kind of...
But for you, it seems to be like something you're noticing that there's...
Yeah.
There's this... That was like a step too far in a way. All I can say is in response to that is, for me, you know, when it comes to Crystal Skull, that's not my problem with Crystal Skull. Like,
it's one of my main problems with Crystal right. Skull.
For me, like, I don't, it wasn't like the alien thing is what like killed the movie for me. It was just, I thought the movie wasn't very good overall. Like,
right.
And the alien thing was, I think that movie could have been a much better film and still had the whole storyline with aliens, and then I would have been fine with it. I think it would have been possible to make a very good film and have it be about ancient aliens and having that tie into an Indiana Jones film, and that totally working for me. So I don't know. That's my quick take on that. Bobby, did you like bump on the alien thing? Like,
no, so
going back in my, time thing.
Or yeah, that's
none of it. All of it is the same on equal footing for me, and I think a lot of that has to do, maybe with the, at least for Crystal Skull, for me, for anyone listening, I only just barely watched that movie during COVID, so that was the first time I had an exposure to it. So I think I have a different experience and come at it in a different way than most people. Because most people saw it in the theater when it came out. And because of how many people said it was terrible, I just completely disregarded that movie. I just never bothered to even try and watch it. So during the time we were on lockdown, I was just like, well, let me finally just watch this movie and see why everyone hates it so much. And I think the reason, part of it could absolutely be just lowered expectations. But I also think there's a little bit of a nostalgia factor for me watching that movie, because at that time, you know, you're talking about a couple of years ago, the most recent thing that I can remember Harrison Ford being in was The Force Awakens. And so that Harrison is very much an aged Harrison. And he, while still being Han Solo-ish, is just, he was still an older person. And so my context from watching Crystal Skull, it was like, that felt like an indie to me, because he was young again, and seeing him in this movie that I've never seen with this character that I know so well, So it was kind of like a nostalgia thing to me more so than anything, because it was like, I get to see Harrison Ford be young again and be youngish. Obviously, he was still pretty old
right.
by the time he made that movie. But yeah, it's definitely not as old as he is now in this movie. So it was like I had a different effect of seeing it and a different feeling seeing it. So it all worked well for me in that sense of not having the issues that most people had. Had I seen it at the time, I probably would have felt like most people did. But yeah, just having a different experience. So the alien thing, obviously I knew about that going into it. It wasn't like that was able to be kept a secret for me all these many years before I saw it and watched it and realized that's what it was. I knew that was what it was going into it. So that wasn't a surprise either. So who knows, maybe over the years that just being saturated in my brain plays a part in it not being a big deal for there being an alien part. Just as much as in this movie, to me, it's like, well, if you've already done aliens, then why not do time travel? So it was like, it didn't bother me. I didn't bump up against time travel either, just because, like I said, if we're going to go out of this world with things and stuff that he's dealing with, then time travel doesn't feel like it's that much more of a stretch than doing aliens. So, yeah, I didn't really have an issue with it from that standpoint.
I haven't, to be honest, I have not like really explored almost any reviews for this movie. So I don't know what the like general reaction has been. I mean, obviously we discussed the general reaction of the movie and like the 68% Rotten Tomato score, but I don't know what the general reaction has been to that ending in particular. If there's been a lot of people that bump on that or not, I really have no clue. And I don't know if you guys have a sense of that or not.
No, I don't know either.
It does seem to be a make it or break it, from what I can, I take that back. It's probably one of the contributing make it or break it issues, for a lot of people who watched it. Either it was a little bit too far in terms of them doing time travel at all, or people who were okay with the time travel had an issue of where he went back to. As opposed to doing a Back to the Future thing where you go back to a previous event that he's already been a part of kind of thing. So there's maybe the three camps. Okay with the time travel, wish the time travel had been played into the other series more, and then people who didn't like the time travel at all.
Who knows? I will say... I will say, I mean, I agree with that. I think that's a good synopsis of the ending and what people think of it. I think I'll say, like, things that worked for me in this film was definitely Harrison Ford. I think there's a lot of stuff that I was like kind of mixed on, and then there was things that were little misses for me. But overall, I would say Harrison's the big win in this one, and I think that the story unfurls in a way that feels complete and makes sense to a point. One of the biggest things that I bumped on when watching this film was like just the whole involvement of the CIA with Mads Mikkelsen's character, the German guy,
right.
Professor. Like, it just seemed very muddled in the explanation of why they're involved with him at the moment. Like I get it. Like, they're kind of like his escorts because he's meeting the president because he basically helped NASA get us to the moon, yada, yada, yada. But it gets kind of murky in certain places. And I think it's kind of, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me in certain times. So I thought that was kind of a miss. It's frustrating because there's moments when I feel like it made sense, like Harrison's physicality or Indy's physicality. There's times he would throw punches at people and it would not affect them as much as I think it used to affect you getting hit and punched by Indiana Jones. And then there were other times he'd punch somebody and they'd be practically knocked unconscious. And I'm not talking about just the beginning of the film when he was de-aged. I'm talking about later in the film. And I was like, I'm confused. Is he too old that his punches aren't as hard? Or is it that they can still be as hard in certain moments? I don't that was kind
of... Some of those guys have glass jaws, Michelle. Come on.
I guess so. I mean...
I don't know.
So I thought that was kind of weird how it kind of got mixed up on and off, you know, in that area. And I was kind of like, well, which is it? Is it that his punches are, you know, weak, not as strong as it used to be? Or are they just as strong as they used to be? Pick one. Like, that was kind of bizarre. I think the de-aging at the beginning of the film... Overall, I think is good. I feel like there were some moments if the motion was going too fast, like if they were doing too much and they're making him talk and move too much at the same time, it got a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it looked good. Especially like there's a couple of shots that they do that I was like, okay, wow, that's really good. But then the issue I have is if you look at the time frame of when he's supposed to be de-aged. To me, he looked like he was de-aged younger than where he was in
Last Crusade.
And he should be de-aged to just older than Last Crusade, timeline-wise, mm-hmm. in the World War II of it all. So that, I thought, was weird. But that's my personal opinion, because David said that he didn't think that he was de-aged younger than that. He thought it was about that age.
I mean, I didn't bump on it while I was watching the movie anyway. I mean, maybe if I watched Last Crusade right now, I might go, oh, wait, wow, you're totally right. He was de-aging. Mm. Like, I don't know. I'd have to, I think, throw on a couple scenes from Last Crusade and kind of remind my brain how he really looked then, because I think it's also easy for our brains to... Like, I'm sitting here looking right now at a picture of how he looks in this movie, and it's... can be almost hard to remember. Wait, how did he look when he was in Last Crusade? You know what I mean? Right. I don't know.
No, I'm with you.
So I'm not sure, but I'll just say, like, when I was watching the movie, I didn't bump on that thinking, oh, wow, he looks younger. Timeline-wise, this doesn't make sense. That's not something I at least noticed.
Well, I'm nitpicky, so I bumped. For me, that was my take on that.
How did you feel overall about the de-aging for Harrison?
Talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because Michelle kind
of... I kind of very similar to you guys. I thought it was mostly just fine, pretty good, or very good. I mean, kind of, I think this is the case almost every time we've seen someone de-age, where there are certain shots where I'm like, oh my God, that looks effing perfect. Like, I mean, and I don't even mean just like when it's a still shot, like the person will be moving around even just a little bit, and I'm like, wow, that looks awesome. And then there'll be other shots where I'm like, that looks like a video game. You know, and there were shots for me in the train where I was like, oh, that kind of is making me feel like this is a really good looking video game, and then other ones that really worked. So, I mean, overall, I don't have an issue with them doing this whole de-aging thing, but it's also tough. It's like, in a perfect world, of course, I would rather them find a way to make it look perfect. Of course, we all want that. I don't know. It's just hard. Like, well, I get wanting to do that in this movie and not just make the entire movie like him older and have this way to tell this kind of backstory and tie it into a younger Indy. Mm-hmm. But it's still tough to watch it and go, wow, yeah, this scene looks a little funky and this scene looks a little funky. But overall, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, the technology is definitely getting better.
Yeah, and I just remembered there's the scene where we get the small flashback scene where he visits his friend, the British gentleman.
Right.
And he's de-aged in it, but it's an older Indiana Jones, but it's de-aged from Harrison. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was actually really good, too. I will say, that scene, I thought, played out really well. I thought the aging was just about right. I thought it just looked really good. I thought it looked good in that scene. For the little bit you get in it, I was like, this looks good. This is solid.
What were you about to say, Bobby? Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that you think you kind of nailed how I feel about it too when it comes to de-aging, or at least bad de-aging. It's hard to look at. I feel like bad de-aging is the Medusa of films for me. It's like I cannot look it in the face. I just look away when I see bad de-aging. It does something. It's weird looking. And so there were a few times, so I think I felt myself kind of looking down or looking away from it to not emphasize it, and I think maybe that's sort of a defense mechanism. So, because I don't want it to pull me out of it,
yeah,
and I kind of look away from it. And you know, three episodes into Secret Invasion, I don't know what they're doing with Samuel Jackson, but they seem to get his de-aging so good. I don't know if they just have such a good model of Sam from back in the day, but he's almost always looked the same too. So it's like, it's this thing where they work some sort of magic on him and it works out so well. And then other people do it and it just doesn't have the same effect. And even when they did do the de-aging well with Harrison, you still had Harrison's today's voice and not a younger sort of modulized voice for him at that time. So
yeah, it was definitely a little more gravelly. So, and it shouldn't be, it shouldn't at that age, he shouldn't have that gravelly a voice.
I mean, the way I noticed is, to me, it definitely sounds like they did something with his voice, but I get the impression they just didn't overdo it. To the point, like, they knowing their limit of this is going to sound funky, so we'd rather him just sound a little older than like go too far and really make it accurate, but then us all go, that sounds odd. Like,
yeah, because, okay, think of it this way, David. We watched this movie and the reported budget is like $290 million or something on it. Yeah. So no doubt that they're going to lose money on this one. But obviously some of it goes into the de-aging. Some of it goes into like the audio, like you mentioned, and other stuff goes into it as well. But I feel like a week from now, maybe a month from now, someone's going to post on Twitter or something, some de-aged look of Harrison from this and the voice, and it's going to be perfect. And we're like, why didn't they just, like, where are these people who are in their basement doing this stuff but aren't getting paid for it, but we get paid, like, ILM workers who are getting paid good money, and they can't churn out the same exact content that someone, you know, sitting in their basement is doing. Right. I know that's going to happen too, because it happened with the Luke Skywalker thing with the Mandalorian. So, yeah.
I thought about that. I was thinking about that as you guys were talking about this, like, you know, how that seems to be the common trend that, like you just said, in social media, somebody on, you know, either on TikTok or something will put an example of a better job at this. And part of me is like, usually when we see those examples, it's like quick shots, and maybe it's not fair to like compare someone doing it with just little clips versus like they had to do it for this entire opening scene, you know? And I don't know, like, because it almost seems unbelievable. Like, how is it possible that they're spending so much money, but yet it would appear that we're seeing better versions of it from people doing it on their own at home? Like, it's tough.
Have you guys seen, I think I probably know the answer, but have you guys seen Across the Spider-Verse yet?
Sadly, no.
Mm-mm. No. Okay, so I have to kind of talk about this because it's relevant to the conversation. There's a scene in there where there's a Spider-Man Lego segment. Now, this Lego segment was created by this 13-year-old kid that's out there who had done a trailer created of the I think it was the first Spider-Man movie, all in Legos. And they saw that, the directors of the new movie saw that and said, hey, why don't we go get this kid? I think he lives in Canada or something, to do this. And he does the sequence in the movie. So I'm like, so at least people see things out there and they're like, hey, maybe there's actually, why instead of us trying to recreate the thing, let's get the person who actually did the thing really good and get them on board. So that's why I'm kind of like, there had to be somebody out there that they could have consulted, or maybe not, you know, gave them some ideas in terms of, oh, well, maybe you want to be looking at this instead of this, and this can make it look a little bit better or whatever. And it just seems so inconsistent with it. It's within the exact same movie. I feel like if it would have all been bad, or if it could have all been good, it is what it is. But for it to sometimes be good and sometimes be bad, I don't know what's going on there exactly.
But you're right too. Like, there are perfectly good examples of certain actors de-age that I don't know if it's the actor or if it's right. just the different crews working on these movies. But like, you know, you mentioned Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, Captain Marvel, like, he's de-aged basically in that entire film, right? And I'm,
yeah.
I'm not saying mm-hmm. it was perfect, but it was pretty damn good where I really did not care. Yeah. I think about it's a pretty short scene, but like the opening scene of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Kurt Russell young. I mean, he's wearing sunglasses mm-hmm. almost the entire time, so that helps. But still, I remember seeing that in the theater and not even thinking about it. Like, I didn't even think about the fact that obviously he's DH for this. Like, it just didn't even cross my mind until later. I'm like, oh, yeah, duh. That's how good it looked. It's weird.
Yeah. Hank yeah. Pym, when they had him in Infinity, not Infinity War. It was Infinity War and I think in one of the other movies.
Yeah. He's
right. younger.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The second
Ant-Man movie, yeah.
But anyway.
I'm trying to think of other positives, negatives for me. I think again, it's like it's a double-edged sword. In one sense, it's nice to see like his old to see Sulla come back, and it's kind of like, oh wow, they're so old. So it's like it's all the sentimentality that I have for Indiana Jones and the whole storyline and like the whole franchise. This is kind of like a little love letter to the people who love the Indiana Jones series. So it's kind of, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of bittersweet is, I guess, the best way to put it. I think one of the things I bumped on is the character of his goddaughter, of Helena. And it's hard because I really enjoy Phoebe Waller-Bridge a lot. Like, in Fleabag, she's spectacular. And I've seen her do some stand-up. Like, she is a tour de force. Like, she is ridiculously good actress and comedian. Like, very, very good. And it's almost like they didn't know. There's moments when I'm like, oh, wow, they used her well in this moment. And there's other moments I'm like, they're not giving her potential. And then there's times I feel like they just wrote her character almost, they wrote her character a little too hard, too 90 degree angles, like just too edgy. And it's like they almost make her unlikable at moments. And there's other moments
I wouldn't even say almost.
There's moments that they, you know, there's things that shine through that are good, but I don't think they wrote her that well. tried to be like, she's a young, exuberant, brilliant, independent woman. And I think that's what they went with. And they just I kind of hate to say it, but this is what happens when there's a lot of men writing a female. And they're trying to make her into this thing. And they don't get it quite right. And I hate to be like all gender specific like that, but it just feels like they're not getting it right. They're making her too unlikable when she's really just had to put up walls and defense mechanisms in her life to be able to pursue what she wants to do.
She was single-handedly almost the entire reason why I didn't like the movie.
Oh,
and wow. That's rough because it's not an indictment of Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I think she's excellent. And yeah. I think she did good with the part that she had. I think she played it well. It's just that I did not like that character. It was so grating. And I just was annoyed most of the time. And not even necessarily because of how much of the way that she was in the movie. It was almost more so to me because it felt like there was no good reason given to her being the way that she was. I mean, there's a couple times she just hangs Indy out to dry in a sense where it's like, oh, he could have died or he could go to jail. You don't care. Like, why not give me something that I can understand and be on her side about? It's not like, at least unless I missed it or somehow it went over me and I didn't catch it. But from what I saw, it didn't seem like she blames Indy for anything in her life in the way that it turned out. And I felt like if that was the case, I would understand why she acts the way she does, and there's a resentment there. But it wasn't like I recall her having this conversation like, oh, when my dad died, you should have been there for me and, you know, kind of like helped raise me. And if so, I wouldn't have turned out this way. It was just more like I'm a bad person for reasons. And so it was just kind of annoying just watching her do the things that she did for most of the movie until towards the end when she does save him. And then it starts to turn around for me, and the character turns around for me at that point too. But by so much time has gone by of me not liking this character. So that's why I was like, oh, she's like really kind of taking this movie down for me on her own.
Well, I think they just, with the character, I don't think they wrote in enough of what's going on in her arc of her character that it, in the end, when it's a complete change, the payoff, it doesn't feel earned. Like the payoff of her character embracing him as family and the kid as family and like starting anew in this new kind of way, like it doesn't pay off, because it just seems like she was this one way in the film and then she just kind of flipped to, okay, now I want to try to make sure Indiana Jones doesn't die, basically, you know, from the time that they're basically about to get on the plane and fly. Like, it doesn't feel like she earned that emotional change in her character. There wasn't enough work throughout the film and moments to that point. I mean, you could say that it started around when they were on the boat and she kind of like hoodwinks the Nazi guys and she goes on that whole tangent, which actually I kind of enjoyed that scene. You know, and she's playing classroom professor and she's trying to see who has the information, you know. Like, I guess you could kind of say that's where it kind of starts turning. And then definitely in the cave, it definitely turns a lot. Like, she definitely realizes, like, oh, crap. Like, I give a crap about this guy now. But it does, up to that point, you don't understand why she suddenly is having this change of heart. Like, why has this suddenly started happening? Like,
you don't get enough from her.
Yeah, but it's not earned.
I'm curious because me and Michelle have given our thoughts. David, how did you feel about her character?
About Helena.
I don't have much to add. You guys have kind of covered it. I'm in the same way. I wouldn't say she single-handedly like kind of ruined the movie for me. But I mean, I said this to Michelle off air. Like, it was a big negative. Mainly she's unlikable, for all the reasons you have said. There's not enough there, not enough character development there, I guess, especially just between her and Indy about like to kind of, like you said, justify kind of the ending. There's like, for instance, there is a quick, like, mention of the fact that you were my godfather and you weren't around, but that's not enough. Like, you know, like there's obviously that's something there, but I wish that could have been explored more. And I mean, you're also trying to do a lot in this movie. So it's true. Like, you know, not that I wish they had gone the route of going, okay, we're going to make one final Indiana Jones film, but we're going to make it a two-parter. And I'm not saying, I mean, that wouldn't have necessarily been a bad thing. Like, you know, this is a big beloved franchise, at least to a lot of us older people. And I would have happily welcomed a really good two-part film. And maybe that would have given them some more breathing room to make this more interesting, at least when it came to the characters. I don't know. I'm more thinking out loud right now. But I don't disagree. I'm not a big fan of her character. I don't have a background with Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I'm pretty sure this is the first thing I've ever seen her in.
David didn't watch Fleabag.
I did not watch Fleabag, but I don't necessarily disagree. I don't think it's her performance. I mean, from what I can tell, it's the writing, I guess, and maybe the editing. Maybe there was a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor that could have helped with the stuff we're complaining about. I don't know. Yeah. So it's also, maybe easy to say it's the writing, but maybe it's not. Maybe the writing was great overall. We just didn't get to see a lot of it. I have no idea. But yeah, in the final product that we got, I cannot disagree with you at all. Like, her character just basically is an unlikable person. And it takes a long time for her to change. And then when she does, it's like, I don't really buy that she's... Why is she changing all of a sudden? I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think there's moments when Phoebe's... her comedic timing comes in, and the way she will kind of attack a joke in certain angles, that came into play a couple times in the film, and you can see that that's really her spin on a situation. Like, that's her way of comedy, and you can kind of see the little blitz of it, and those are some of the best parts of her character, in my opinion, that would come through. I'd be like, oh yeah, there she is. There's kind of, you know, Phoebe's comedic timing and the way she has a delivery system, you know, the way she delivers something. Like, you can kind of get parts of it, and I really enjoyed those moments when they would happen.
I feel like what would have worked better for me, at least watching this movie and in this character, would have been if they just went the direction that they kind of started to set it up with, which was like, oh, she has this thing from her father, and she's not trying to sort of grift Harrison. She's not trying to grift Indy. She's like actually bringing this to him, and, you know, let's finish what my dad started. And she could be like his apprentice, or like his, you know, person that he's trying to teach his ways. But she's young, and she's going to make mistakes along the way in the adventure and do different things that can mess it up. So that seems like that would be a possibility, as opposed to her being in and leading in with this sort of this grip because she owes people money. And that's where it was like she was sort of cold and heartless in the way that she would interact with him about different things. And it just, I don't know, all they had to do is slightly tweak things here or there, and I think that character would read a lot better. But yeah, I don't know. So I'm curious what you guys, what your take is on Antonio Banderas' role in this movie.
I don't know. I'll be honest. I mean, I didn't really, I don't have much of an opinion on it. He's fine.
Yeah.
The characters.
So,
I mean, I guess now I'm already curious why you're asking.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the reason I asked is because I have seen a little bit out there, and I know you guys haven't really seen any reviews or stuff, and there's a decent amount of complaining in terms of the usage of his character, that he's on screen for a little bit, and then he gets killed off. And people were like, well, you know, how do you have Antonio Banderas in the movie, and he's like only in there for a few minutes or whatever, and it seems like there should have been more there with that character, especially being an old friend of Indy's and all that stuff. And so I think the way I kind of took it, well, I take it the way I take all these movies when someone appears in it that's famous, and people will say usually it's a waste of a character when someone who's of import plays a character like that. But then I always, my side of it is always, well, the actor got the script. They know what they're signing on for, so they know just how large or small a part is. So sometimes they just want to be a part of a project, and it doesn't have to be the main focus of something. And it could be like they're just there for a few minutes. And for us, it'd be like, oh, that's a waste of a character. But you wouldn't say that if that just had been a no-name character or actor who was playing that character. You just would have thought, oh, it was Indy's friend and he got killed off. But because it's Antonio Banderas, it's like it adds something to it that he should have been in there longer.
It's
just because of that, which I don't agree with. I think it's you go by the character, not because of the actor.
Right. It's almost like I would imagine people complaining about this, just guessing, or... are like, oh, when that scene first pops up, then you see he's in it. People are probably like, oh, wow, it's Antonio Banderas. Cool. What's this character going to be like? And then when it's just so quick, it's like, oh, like,
yeah. But
I agree with you, Bobby. Like, it doesn't matter that he's a named actor or not.
Yeah.
Like, You know?
And I think he even came out and said, like, guys, I just wanted to be a part of this world.
Right. That happens a lot where you have some big actor who is just like, maybe they're either friends with the director or something, right, or they're just love Indiana Jones. They just really want to be in this. It's like the random cameos that we would get in, like, you know, Force Awakens or,
right,
you know,
they're
stuff
not.
Like,
I think people are thinking too deep of the actor in the character and not just. I agree with what Bobby's saying, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, like, if there was anything that they could possibly expound upon is, like, I don't know, maybe had him show up in the original, in the first flashback scene, like, on a boat, and then be like, hey, good timing. I don't know. But, like, because it does kind of seem like they just interjected this person. It just kind of works out that he knows this guy with a boat off of Greece. it's extremely handy. I'll put it that way. I think my big issue, quite honestly, isn't just because, like, oh, they killed him off, but it's like, I feel like in this film, I will say, I feel like there's a lot more guns. A lot more,
like, straight up shooting and killing
people. Straight up shooting and killing people in this film than I think in more traditional Indiana Jones. I'm not saying that there aren't guns in other ones. I'm just, it felt like it was more heavy-handed in this film for some reason, in my opinion. And I don't know quite why. I
thought it was the time, basically. Because I remember thinking the same thing, but I just felt like, oh, well, we're in the 60s, right? So I guess that matches up to what there would be more guns out than when he was back in the day traveling around and doing stuff with. I don't know. I thought about it, but then I think I rationalized it in my brain.
And kind of to go back on what I was saying earlier, like, the whole CIA being involved, I think, is kind of murky, and they don't explain it super clearly well. Yeah. I think they just kind of did it to kind of give some edge to a couple of chase scenes. And kind of the same with, like, Helena having this fiance guy basically trying to kill her to win her back in a weird way. Like, yeah. It seemed extremely forced just to have a really awesome chase scene where there's, like, two protagonists going after. No, wait. Two. Now I can't think. Anyways, the two. Going after the good guys. Like, two bad guys going after the good guys at the same exact time in a chase scene is what it felt like. It felt very forced. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Not. I think that kind of brings me to the other point that I wanted to mention as far as why I almost didn't like the movie. And that was the amount of stretches and coincidences that seemed to happen in this movie that felt blatant to me in a way that I don't always feel like in other movies or in general. I mean, they're obviously there, but it felt like there was a number of them in this one where it was just like, well, that's convenient, but it's only convenient for the script, you know, for the story to be where it is. So it was like, there's got to be another way to write that. And for instance, one scene sticks out in my head right now is just when they leave the boat or they get the artifact from the boat and they go to the other island or whatever.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
They're going around town. What's that, David?
I said I know where you're going with this.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see if it matches up to where you're thinking. They're going around the town and they're doing different things. And then the kid, he goes, wanders off on his own. And sure enough, right around the corner in the alleyway is the bad guys. It's like, really? Like, at that point,
whole town.
That they just happen to be in that spot and no one else is around him and he gets taken. So, but there was not just that one instance. There was a few like that I was just kind of like, why did they write it that way? It could have been written in a smoother way where it just
some things
didn't
are
seem
just a little
like
too coincidental, too easy of a win. Maybe not a win, just too easy of a plot point, like,
was that what you were thinking, David, that I was gonna say?
Actually, not exactly, and maybe I'm getting my timing of things wrong, and I yeah, you'll have to excuse my brain, but like, so that, wait, was that, that was right after basically the scene on the boat with the diving, right?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think my more thing, my bigger thing was like how quickly and conveniently they were able to get back to that land. Too. Like that was my main thing I bumped on.
We've got a full tank of gas and it'll just get us there.
Well, like the boat was, effed, like, right? Like,
yeah, the bad guys.
Yeah, the bad guys. Like, somebody had to rescue them. Like,
yeah.
And they were very quickly and conveniently rescued, I guess.
Right. Like, it seemed like they used like a life raft, right? A very tiny little dinghy is what it looked like they were loading into. So, like, I'm sure there was a life raft on the main boat and they were just loading it as dinghy. And I'm thinking, well, the dinghy's not going to make it to where Indy's going. The dinghy's only got to go back the other direction to an island or something. Like,
yeah,
it just was, it was, that was very, wait, what? It's the whole, like, how did the bad guy beat us to the end point of the game? Like, how did that happen? They were way back there. Like, yeah, there's just, I don't know, it's like there's a lot of stuff I could pull away from this movie that I don't like, but overall I think the general feeling left me with, okay, I like this. It's good, you know, like the very end scene of this film when he is talking to Archimedes and he's thinking he's going to die and Helen is there and she's going, no, you can't be here. Like, that's not how history goes. Like, and she's fighting with him to Archimedes trying to get him back. And I'm watching this whole scene and I'm sitting there thinking Indiana Jones can't die, which is silly because he's old. He's going to die. Everybody dies. But I was like, he can't die. Like, that's not the, like, if you think about this is based off old radio serials. Like, that's not how those characters are written. They never die. They live for infamy. Like, forever. They just live.
Basically, like a James Bond kind of character.
Yes. Forever. Yes. Yeah. And so, for me, I'm like, Indiana Jones can't die. And he can't die in the Roman War. This is bullshit. And so, finally, when she slugs him unconscious, I'm like, oh, thank God. She finally just did the thing. Like, but I was enjoying that scene. I was enjoying just their conversation with Archimedes in Greek and with each other and the argument, and I enjoyed that scene a lot, and it just brought a lot of good feels, upset feels, but in a good way, and I think that really helped hit it home for me.
That's what it did for me too, Michelle, is like, that's why I said that the last like 30 minutes or so is what turned me around on it, because once they go from, I'd say starting from the cave scene all the way to the rest of the movie is what really kind of got me in on it. And just them going in the past and just Indy's, you know, fascination with actually being in that time period and seeing it and witnessing history. He was, as an archaeologist, I mean, that's like a wet dream. So, yeah, he was obviously living his best life at that point, you know, reinvigorated. And so that really felt like an adventure part of Indiana Jones that I loved seeing, and that fulfilled that part for me. So seeing that was like that whole aspect of him being back there with the war and everything that happened there was cool. I mean, I even was willing to accept a little kid learning how to fly a plane, even though, you know, and but whatever.
Well, so, but you got that whole, okay, you got that whole 20-second like scene of the pilot getting drunk in the bar, quote unquote, teaching him how to fly. Sure. So, you know, it makes perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely. And Antonio Banderas telling him, just paddle like a dog, and now you know how to swim. And sure, he pulls that off, too. So, there's things that he's able to do that's just kind of like, whatever. So I didn't really, I knew it was terrible, but I just didn't give it a care, really. And so everything else. I had to pick my battles. I let some of that stuff go. So I was just like, all right, this is good. I'm enjoying this other stuff. And then, of course, he's reunited with Marion at the end, and then that was the part that I was just like, yes.
Oh, dude.
Where does it hurt?
And when the John Williams Marion score starts up, I was like, oh, you're killing me. I got all emotional in the theater about that. I was like, John Williams, god dang you. John, you're killing me.
Yeah, that definitely was like just me, the cherry on the top for me, just having her back. Because I didn't honestly know that she had done anything for the movie. That was kept pretty well a good secret. I didn't know it was coming. So having her appear at the end and just them getting back reunited and knowing that more than likely we won't get any more adventures and that's how it's going to end for them back, you know, together. That's like, yes, okay, I'm with this. And ending this way for me makes me happy, and I'm good.
I don't really have anything else. You guys have anything?
No, other than I guess you. I don't know if you did say or if you want to expand upon your thoughts about that actual time travel sequence where they're actually back in that time and just
the,
being back with Marion.
I mean, when it comes to the time travel thing, I had no issues with that. Like, I mean, kind of like going back to what we were talking about earlier with the aliens, you know, comparing it to what they did in Kingdom of Crystal Skull, if that's what you mean. Like, I mean, that's no, I
well, just the actual, not the concept of it, but the actual execution of it, like what actually
I thought the execution was good. Actually, I was enjoying it to a certain extent. I thought I liked it. I thought it totally worked for me. I thought the ending worked with reuniting with Marion, and I think they could have gone probably too far with trying to make it this big kind of like Indiana Jones ending, which I don't think they needed to do just because this is the last film. Mm-hmm. Like, I could have seen a situation where they were to just make it this big, like, farewell kind of moment. And in a lot of ways it is, but it's in the way they did it, I liked. I don't think it was, like, over the top is what I'm saying.
It was like a cute wink goodbye
at
the end.
Yeah.
I know this couldn't have happened, but I just would have loved a post-credit scene where, you know, him and Marion are there and Saul is there or whatever. Everybody's there. And you hear a knock on the door and he opens the door and it's Short Round. And he's like, Indy, I need your help or something. And then it just cuts. And then I would be like, yes, we like a Short Round movie coming up with, you know, in the next adventure. And,
right.
You know, it wouldn't be Indy or something, but it could just be him. And I know they couldn't because obviously at that time the movie had been shot long ago and he hadn't come back to acting at that time. Right. And so, yeah, it wouldn't have happened. But that was the only thing that I was thinking in terms of what was missing
in that movie
for me.
I just thought of, you know, it'd been really cool. So Sulla and his grandkids and Helena and I can't think of the guy, her like, you know, surrogate son, whatever you want to call him. Mm. They go to leave for ice cream, right? What if she gets downstairs and she bumps into a guy and all you see is his back and he's holding a newspaper and it has some kind of like headline story that's related to something that happened in the movie. And she bumps him and she's like, oh, excuse me. And he turns around and it's Short Round. And he was like, oh, no apologies necessary. And then she keeps walking away with everybody else. And then it goes from a shot of him back up to the hat.
Mm.
Or he could be looking at a piece of paper with the address written on it and he's trying to find the building.
Oh, see, yeah.
Boom.
Well, you know, I just would have loved something, but I know why we couldn't. So I'm not mad or dinging it for that. It's just, it's too bad that we couldn't have got something with him in there as well.
Yeah, he could have been like holding the address and he could have gone, actually, do you know where this is? She goes, oh, it's actually this building right here. And he's like, oh, thank you. And then he could have gone one direction and she could have kept going with them. Oh, that would have been good.
No, I was going to say, it's actually funny you guys are kind of talking about this because, I mean, Michelle, you'll remember, I said after the movie, I specifically mentioned, I'm like, I'm glad they didn't try to do something with Short Round. I mean, I was just like, I like that it was a more muted like reunion of just Marianne and Saul was there and that was it. I'm like, don't get me wrong, I love Short Round and everything, but I don't know. I thought it'd been too much, in my opinion.
It's like I think about it, and I think it would have been too much if, like, he'd walked in behind Sulla and his grandkids, and then he walked into the apartment, too. That, I think, would have been too much. But I think actually having a small interaction between, like, him and Helena downstairs outside, that would have been just a taste. It would have just been like, the next moment is him going up to the apartment.
Right.
And we're not going to see that. But, like, the knowledge that that was going to happen, I think, would have been kind of... Right. I would have been okay with that.
I was going to say, too, though, like, kind of to wrap it up for me, I like this movie overall. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed this movie, and I'm glad we saw it. And then when I stand back and I think about the Indiana Jones franchise, and if in some weird, you know, fantasy land of, like, what would I have done? Like, I still would never have made 4 and 5.
Like, in a perfect world, 4 and 5 would never exist.
You know, and I think... With that said, though, for me, and of course, hindsight being 2020, you know, considering how they did do things, like, I either just never would have made another Indiana Jones movie again, or I would have done something kind of similar to, you know, something we referenced earlier, like with the James Bond franchise, where it's like you just make more Indiana Jones movies, but you don't include Harrison Ford. You just recast it. And that may sound like sacrilege to a lot of people. And I love Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. And in a lot of ways, he's the only Indiana Jones. But you say that, and then you start to see other actors in the role, and they could totally work just differently.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we'd still get all these adventures, and it'd be a lot of fun with the same kind of feeling of Indiana Jones movies. And, you know, we could get many more movies on into the future for as long as people would care about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, that, I think in hindsight, that's, I think, approach that would, I kind of wish they would have explored, but obviously they did not.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Like, I think it would have been cool if it had been, like, the original trilogy, you know, the overarching theme there is religion, you know? And then they could have done a couple other films with another actor that don't really even reference that portion of Indiana's life. It could be a whole other part of Indiana's life. And they could do, like, three films. And, like, just like James Bond, you could do a couple of films and then a new person could come into the hat. And
right.
I think that would be nice. Like, because you've said it before perfectly, and I fully agree, because that's how I think. Honestly, the franchise wrapped up perfectly at the end of The Last Crusade. They were literally on horses riding off into the sunset. I mean, like, it was done. It was done for me. I was good. I'm happy with that. And I didn't need to have more in my life. Unless, again, like you said, like, it became another actor, you know, filling in with the bullwhip in the hat.
Or if earlier on, they, you know, back when they made Crystal Skull, they would have done a better job of, like, doing something with, like, Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character, Helena, like, you know, or some character like that, where it's, like, almost like an apprentice, like, learning from him, somebody who would take it on, you know. Of course, with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, it appeared that they were trying to go for a son taking things over kind of thing, and but we all know that failed miserably, so.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the original trilogy is still extremely beholden. I'm beholden to that trilogy.
But it's funny, though, I mean... I don't know. I was watching Temple of Doom just the other day, randomly. Like, just put it on while I was doing stuff, just because it was the one movie of the trilogy I felt like I had seen the least recently. Like, and, you know, I was watching it going, obviously, I love this movie, and I still love this movie, but there's definitely certain things, as with a lot of older movies, that you go, man, if I were older when I had seen this, would I love this? Like, you know, I'm watching the scene with the water going through the mines that they have been traveling through for forever.
Oh, yeah. Like, the longest
mine.
The longest mine, not only in India, but in the entire world.
And it's a big thing of water, but it's not that big.
Right. I mean,
it would have had to have been an ocean of water, like, pumping through these mines. Right. I don't know. It was just a moment I was watching this going, wow, this is pretty ridiculous. Like,
it's, again, with Indiana Jones, there's that level you have to let go of believability, and you have to pick your battles on what you want to believe and what you don't want to believe with Indiana Jones, for sure. I think it's kind of like, you know, when I was a kid, I thought Back to the Future 3, I thought it was horrible and I did not like it. And now as an adult, I've in more recent years, I've sat down and watched all three Back to the Futures. And I have a different appreciation now for that third film. And I understand the whole overarching storyline that links the three. Like, it all kind of, I get it now. And I remember when I was a kid watching Temple of Doom, I kind of initially, you know, I was kind of like, it's my least favorite of the three. Like, I used to not really like it. And I don't even know what the order is now. I couldn't even tell you. It depends on my different day of the week, different moods. But it's one of those films, like, rewatching as you get older, I understand a lot more of that film in the overarching sense of all three of the original Indiana Jones trilogies. And my appreciation for that second film is so much more now than when I was younger. It's just amazing when you look at things as a kid versus looking at things with adult eyes. It's absolutely, like, blows your mind.
I am curious to watch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull again, though, because it has been quite a while, and I'm actually still trying to remember if I've ever seen it a second time. I don't think I have. I think I started it once.
You did.
I put it on, and I think I watched... I mean, it was another one of those, like, it's the weekend, and I was probably ended up just doing other things, but I think I watched, like, basically the opening scene, and that was really it. But I would like to sit down and watch it again, and I mean, hey, I will watch it with an open mind, and maybe I'll watch it again and go, actually, yeah, it's still not great, but it's not that bad. Mm. Like, or maybe I'll go, no, it's just as bad as
I'm officially willing to watch that film again, but I think I'd like to sit down and watch it with you and have the, like, okay, we're going to watch this. And if at any moment we want to pause to discuss or point things out, we can do that. And, like, really, like, digest that film and try to either find the positive in it or really understand what it is that's the negative that really makes the focal of the whole film just go downhill for everybody.
Right. That won't be really soon, though, because, like, right now I'm actually like, oh, man, I've only got a couple days. I kind of really wanted to rewatch Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation, and Fallout before... The next movie, I don't know if we'll have time.
I don't know if we're gonna have time for that. I think summertime's busy. Busy, busy, busy. I like where your head's at, though. I mean,
you just got a couple weeks before you'll be out here, so not a lot of time to do a lot of stuff.
Not
California love.
We still don't know when we're gonna see Oppenheimer because of that.
Yeah, we still haven't figured that out yet. We need to nail that down. Oppenheimer needs to happen. It needs to happen in IMAX.
Well, with that, you guys got anything else before we go?
No, good.
This wraps up our thoughts on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. With that, we'd love to hear back from all of you listening. You can email us at feedback@flickereffect.com. You can find us on Instagram @flicker_effect. We are on Twitter as well at the same handle, @flicker_effect. We'll probably be on whatever thing, Twitter alternatives there are. We haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Threads
that I've been poking around with tonight before we started this record. But yeah, we'll see. With that, I'm David Lott.
I'm Bobby Jackson.
And I'm Michelle Hillard.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.